Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an Asian, see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't going to be in there. But 51% of your prisoners will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Black won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control buildings and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 or 13 times for at least. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folks got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisoners in the United States are black people. You know you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, boy, who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
I was talking to a cat the other night. He said, what everybody's looking for is, what everybody's looking for today, they're looking for escapism. that prayer.
Man, you know we better take it on the lamb.
You better watch the man.
I don't like the hood. What you say, prayer?
I said we better take it on the lamb out of here.
You better watch the man.
But
come over here, brother. Let me tell you. You think we're talking too loud?
Hush that butt.
I ain't got no dust.
I don't have to take it on the land.
Watch that man.
Huh?
Watch that man.
Watch them. Yeah, all right. You're right. Yeah, yeah. Coming from some funny places.
What you say, bro?
What's happening? Wow.
Trying to get down.
Well, you know, look at him. We can't have
that. That's right. Right on. Yeah.
Ain't no alcohol. Man, I don't dig it.
What you say, Jason?
Hey, don't be so mean.
You know I'm clean now. Yeah.
And on the sea.
Now learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said, this man that went to heaven, he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he said, nah, I want to know what's in the door. He said, you sure you want to see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it, because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on Pity Way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he can fix me, and change me and get me over here trying to do better. Now, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad a cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again, this time on the near side, for another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles, the kid no one would pick, was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Okay, man, it's real light around here this morning. Okay, we got open mics. I announced the school. I'm going to just play some audios because we got 2 hours worth of time, but we might not do that today. So if you guys got anything, 619-768-2945, let's discuss it.
I used to spend the night in hotel parking lots. What was I going to do? I ain't had nowhere to stay, so I lived in the car. I had $35. And I said, come on, God, man, I've been trying to make this dream come true. You done left me out here like this. And I was crying so hard that he just said, I didn't like hear a voice or nothing, but he spoke to me. And however, he said, if you get up, I'm going to take you places you ain't never been. Now, I was finna quit. So I said, skip it. I'm going to quit anyway. So I got in my car. I went to a payphone. And I was going to call my dad. You remember back in the day where you could punch in a code and call your answering machine and get your messages? So I called and I punched in the code and the dude said, doop. He said, hey, Steve, this is Chuck Sutton with Showtime at the Apollo. We saw a tape of you. You're very funny. If you could get here Sunday night, we'd love to put you on television. Call me back. Let me know if you can make it. So I hung the phone up. I'm crushed because my whole dream of being on TV, and I couldn't get to New York. I got $35. How am I going to get to New York? I can't make it. So I'm standing there at the phone booth and tears just coming down my face. I said, God, so that must be a sign for me to go home because this is it. I ain't even got the money to go to the Apollo. My whole thing, I wanted to be on TV. I couldn't even make the dream come true. This is the most messed up moment. And so I said, man, let me call this dude back and see if he said this Sunday. Because maybe he said next Sunday and I could hustle up a little bit of money or something. I don't know what I'm going to do, but let me just call him back. So I call him back. Steve, this is Chuck Sutton, Showtime at the Apollo. We saw a tape of yours. You're very, very funny. Look, we have an opening Sunday night at Showtime at the Apollo. If you can make it, we'd love to put you on TV. I said, it's this Sunday. Before I hit the button, I heard, doop, you have another message. Now, it wasn't there before. So I punched my code in. I listened to the second message. It says, Steve Harvey, this is Tom Sober from the Comedy Caravan. This was a Thursday. He said, I have a gig in Jacksonville, Florida on Friday night that pays $150. If you can get there Friday night, you'll make $150. So I called him back. And I said, hey, Tom, did you get a gig away? He said, no, it's still available. He said, can you get there? I said, I'm in Pensacola, Florida. I'm 3.5 hours away. So I drive to Jacksonville, Florida. And that night, I made the 150. The club owner said, man, you're funnier than the guy we hired. If you stay tomorrow night, I'm going to give you another $150. So now I got $300 now. So I get on the phone, I call Chuck Sutton, I say, hey man, is the gig still available at Showtime at the Apollo? He said, yeah, we got one opening left. I said, I'll be there. So I call Eastern Airlines, who used to be open back then. They had a special for $99 going from Jacksonville, Florida to New York round trip. So I park my car at the airport. I got it. Got on a plane, flew. Everything I had was in two bags. Got to the Apollo. I said, hey, man, I'm here. I got there at 11 o'clock in the morning. He said, you can't stay here because you don't come on to the late show tonight. I said, man, I ain't got nowhere to go. I said, if you just let me stay in this building, man, I ain't going to move around nothing. I ain't got nowhere to go. I'm in Harlem. I can't go back out here. I got these two bags. I got victim wrote all over me, man. So he said, all right, if you go upstairs, don't come down. So he put me in a dressing room on the 6th floor. So that's where all the comedians were. So I stayed up there. I got hungry around 3 o'clock, man. I couldn't take it no more. So I went back downstairs, a dude named Alton Liston. I said, hey, man. He said, man, I thought I told you don't come down them damn steps. I said, hey, man, I'm just hungry, man. I said, let me go to that KFC I saw on the corner. Just let me get some chicken. I'll come right back. He said, man, if you ain't back in 20 minutes, you ain't getting in this building. So I went, bought me some chicken, came back. So the comedians started coming in the building. They started coming up on the sixth floor. So I meet this guy named D.L. Hughley. I introduce myself. He introduced himself. I'm sitting there. Another guy come in named Dwayne Johnson. Then this other dude walked in named Jamie Foxx. And I introduce myself. We don't know each other. Ain't none of us famous. It's 1991, man. They gave everybody the lineup. I was on the last show of the night. I don't go on to 11 at night. I done had this four pieces of chicken. I'm starving, man. That chicken done wore off. I'm nervous, man. I'm about to throw up. D.L. Hughley went downstairs. D.L. Hughley got booed off. Dwayne Johnson got booed off. Jamie Foxx went down there and got booed. They booed Jamie, then Jamie started singing. And then they started clapping. And Jamie had their ass, then he went back to them jokes, and they got his ass. So I'm walking down the steps, and I see Jamie sitting on the steps. I said, hey, man, hang in there. He said, man, that ain't never happened to me before, man. This is crazy. This Jamie Foxx, man, one of the most talented people in all of comedy. And now, you don't even know how nervous I am, man. I can't even. My breathing is shot because these dudes been booed. So I walk out. I had wrote this joke. Mike Tyson had got in a fight in Harlem with this heavyweight named Mitch Green. Mike Tyson had hit the dude in the eye in the store. Now, he was on the news. His eye was swollen. So the joke I wrote was, they was interviewing Mitch Green, and he was telling everybody what happened, but his eye took over the interview. And I wrote this joke that his eye started talking and was just, I tell you what happened.
The heavyweight champ's fist is coming towards my face. I just say, Lord, Lord, Lord.
And I wrote this whole joke about this dude's eyeball talking. And when the punch came, and all this here, the Apollo, man, they went crazy. They lost their mind. I got a standing ovation, man. I walked off stage, man, just started crying. I couldn't believe it. They paid me. I made $750 for being on TV for one night. I'd never made $750 telling jokes in one night. And so that was my first television appearance. A couple weeks later, Sinbad was the host of the show. He got this job on Different World. And so he quit. And so Mark Curry became the host. And then Mark Curry got hanging with Mr. Cooper, and he quit. And they came to me and said, would you come back to New York and host Amateur Night for us to just try you out? Oh, ain't no problem. And so I went to New York. I hosted Amateur Night, and I was killing. But every time we went to commercial break, I was supposed to let the warm-up act take over like Ruben does. But I knew not to let the warm-up act do that because he would change the attitude of the crowd because Apollo was a wild place. So I stayed out there. I did the warm-up and the hosting. And I created a bond with that audience. And that's how I got on TV. It was my very first TV show. I hosted Showtime at Apollo. I ended up being the longest-running host in the history of Showtime. I did that show for 8 years. Nobody ever did it for 8 years. And that was my turn-back moment. See, in your life, everybody has a turn back moment. You have a moment where you can go forward or you can give up. But the thing you have to keep in mind before you give up is that if you give up, the guarantee is it will never happen. That's the guarantee of quitting, that it will never happen, no way under the sun. The only way the possibility remains that it can happen is if you never give up no matter what. Because God is always coming. He's never too late. At your worst moment, look, man, when they told me I had to be in New York, I saw no way I could get there. But that God, though, he make the phone ring. I end up in Florida. I make $300. Then I go to New York. I make $750. Almost got $1,000 out of nowhere. That's what happened to me. That was my moment of never giving up. That's when I first learned that faith was everything, that you have to remain faithful.
Okay, anybody out there? 619-768-2945. Okay, well, we're gonna do a quiet Monday, and we'll just do a quiet Monday. Play some audio.
No angel, but you got a halo. When it starts like this, I really wanna be.
What's up, y'all? It's me, Marie, and I'm back with another freaking video.
Okay, we we started off at the beginning with Offering Offered Energy Academy, explained about that. Open lines, I'm going to play just another musical interlude, and we're going to get to some texts that we've received in the last few days on some trending topics that you guys might want to discuss in a few minutes. Okay, I found a story. I got texted this last week. It's, you know, we done talked about reparations on there a gazillion times, but this one's got a, this is a reparations twist. We're going to discuss something that somebody sent me last week. Angela Davis. Angela, we all know who Angela Davis is. If you don't know who she is, you can look her up online. I'm going to read you the article about Angela Davis in relationship to reparations in 2 minutes.
$14 billion. That's how much Alibaba, the Chinese e-commerce giant, made in just 24 hours. That's more than the total online U.S. sales from both Black Friday and Cyber Monday combined. It happened during an unofficial Chinese holiday called Singles Day. But what is Alibaba? What is Singles Day? And how did they make so much money so quickly? Singles Day literally translates to Bear Sticks Holiday, a reference to the Chinese expression bear branches. The expression refers to bachelors who aren't adding branches to the family tree. Now, all of this is rooted in China's one-child policy. Implemented between 1978 and 1980, it was intended to curb the country's overpopulation problem, but the policy had unintended blowback. China now has a massive gender imbalance. By 2020, it's projected that men will outnumber females by at least 30 million, hence Singles Day. From this national turmoil, the unofficial holiday was born at this university. It's a day that was initially meant for single men to party with other single friends. Though, fast forward to 2009, Alibaba CEO Daniel Zhang sees a business opportunity to co-opt the unofficial holiday in an attempt to drum up more online sales. In China, spikes in shopping sales were common in late September before China's National Day, and again in the first 2 months of the year before the Spring Festival. Those two retail polls created a lull in late autumn, which Alibaba hoped to exploit with deep price cuts. And it worked. Seeing the potential of Alibaba's move, most Chinese retailers jumped on board the next year. Now, Singles Day has become the biggest shopping day in the entire world, and it looks like it's just going to get even bigger.
Okay, all right, let me read this story, and thank you for the person who texted it to me. All right, let's go to the New York Post. Oh, hold it. That's the wrong story. That's another story. Okay. Black Panther Angela Davis discovers her ancestor came to the U.S. on a Mayflower. Okay. Black, and I'm reading this. This is not me. This comes from the Daily Mail. A Black Panther columnist, Angela Davis, who teaches that the U.S., the United States, was built by racist colonizers, faces calls to pay reparations at the genealogy reveal. Her white pure ancestor arrived in America on the Mayflower. Okay. A famed Black Panther, who's also a communist, has faced calls to pay reparations after discovering her ancestors were white Puritans who arrived in the United States, or what we now call the United States, on the Mayflower. Angela Davis, 79 years old, was flabbergasted to discover that both sides of her family were white, and that her mom's ancestors were slave owners. On a PBS show, Public Broadcasting System show, Finding Your Roots. Okay. And the stunning revelation sparked calls for the famously woke Marxist University of California professor to herself pay reparations, having previously called on whites to pony up in the past. Sharing a tweet about the show, conservative pundit Matt Walsh wrote, "It gets better. She also descended from a slave owner. On her father's side is a pilgrim. On her mother's side is a slave owner. Looks like Angela Davis owes some reparations." Another Twitter user called AK Camera, spelled with a K, wrote, "Angela Davis, the radical Marxist and former Black Panther, recently discovered that she is also an ancestor of colonizers and slave owners. I guess she owes herself reparations. The timeline is hilarious." Okay, let's see. And we got Skip Gates there. Okay. All right. Davis became nationally known in 1970 when guns she owned were used in the holding up of a Marin County courtroom in California. Four people dead, including the judge. After the FBI issued a warrant for her arrest, she went on the run and became listed as one of the department's 10 most wanted, FBI's 10 most wanted. After her eventual arrest, she spent 16 months in jail before being found not guilty. Davis was born in Birmingham, Alabama in 1944 during an era of segregation and violent racial division in the South. While studying in West Germany, in her youth, she was drawn to the far-left politics upon returning to U.S. and became involved in the Black Panthers and the Communist Party of the United States. She appeared shocked during the TV interview that aired this week in which Finding Your Roots host Henry Louis Gates, Jr., told her of her ancestry. I love Gates. No, I can't believe this. My ancestors did not come here on the Mayflower, she said, only to be told that they did not indeed, only to be told later that they did indeed arrive in the U.S. aboard the famed pilgrim ship. The Mayflower was an English boat that brought white English families known as the Pilgrims to the American continent to permanently establish the New England colony in 1620. In 1620, there was no such thing as the United States of America. Just saying. Okay. You're descended from the 101 people who sailed the Mayflowers. Mayflower reiterated Gates Jr., who is the director of Hutchins Center for African American Research at Harvard University. The one-hour show, public figures learn about their ancestry, outlined how William Brewster, who had traveled aboard the boat with his wife, Mary Wentworth Brewster, was Davis's 10th great-grandfather. Mary was one of only five adult women from the Mayflower to have survived the first winter after arriving in the U.S., and one of four such to survive until the first Thanksgiving in 1621, which she was said to have... Come here, dog. Crying over here. Sorry, people. All right. The revelation caused many to point out the complexity. You're not going outside yet. Jesus. All right. People, this dog's got me trained. Well, anyway, she's not going out right now. The concept of reparations, an idea The concept of reparations that Angela Davis has endorsed in the past is that people with ancestors who are enslaved should financially be reimbursed by those ancestors who enslaved them. This vividly illustrates the absurdity of reparations concept, among other things. Said one person on Twitter in response to the clip of the revelation. For any talk about reparations, everybody needs to take an ancestry DNA test. I think a lot of people would be shocked to discover who they were descended from, said another. Okay, Davis also made discoveries about her mother, Sally Bell, who was found to be the daughter of a successful white Alabama lawyer who himself descended from a slave owner. Bell was a school teacher and grew up in a foster home, never knowing either of his biological parents. Her mother had genetics traced back to Africa, but her father was John Aston Darden, who was also involved in politics and was born in Rockford, Coosa, Alabama, 1879. He has my mother's lips. Davis said he was presenting a photo to her grandfather. I can't get used to the fact that this is my mother's father. The clipping of this is, you know what, this is a wake-up call. Okay. He also was a member of the Ku Klux Klan or a white citizens council, Davis asked. I mean, oh, well, no, she asked that as a question. That's something I would also want to know. Because in those days, in order to receive that power, one had to thoroughly embrace white supremacy. Okay, let's see. Well, okay, that's Angela Davis. You know what? This week, I'm going to find an audio clip of that, her and Gates. That's got to be a classic one there. Looks like Angela. So what do you guys think? Should Angela Davis be held accountable to pay reparations not only to herself? Well, hold on. Can she do that? Or should she be held accountable to pay reparations to other people? Because according to her bloodline, and you know, just like baking a cake, if you take one ingredient out, it's not the same. Whatever you're trying to bake is not going to be the same. She's made up of a lot of ingredients, including slave owners and some more stuff. People from the Pilgrims. So I thought that was a very interesting, but like I said, I'm going to find audio, hopefully, I don't know, by the end of the week, if not by tomorrow. And I was just like, I'm waiting to watch the video and just read her face. Because Gates is pretty thorough. They check, double check, recheck, quadruple check before they invite the person out and they do the filming of the segment. So he's got a crackerjack research team. So anyway, what do you guys think? Should Angela Davis? What's your take on it? See, a lot of us, we might be facing the same thing. Let's see. Area code 314, your mic is open.
Hey, L.A., what's going on?
Oh, I remembered that clip from last week. Thanks for sending it. So I thought that was, you couldn't have gotten a better person to send a clip on, particularly when it comes to reparations, Angela Davis.
Absolutely. She owned her family. She owned the Indians because they took her relatives took the Indian land.
Right.
Absolutely.
If Elder Cleaver's still living, I can't think. I'm going to look up, but she's a prime example of, I'm glad Gates did her DNA.
And she ain't the only one. Hell, Corey Booker.
Okay.
Hakeem Jeffries. You got a lot of them that's hollering for reparations. And their ancestors were slave owners.
Right.
That goes to show you the bigotry, the hypocrisy, and the downright ideology and foolishness that comes out of these people.
Right.
Angela Davis is light, bright, damn near white. It should be a what you think moment. She ain't
but
no African.
You're correct, because more than likely somebody who's light-skinned somewhere up that family tree, and you don't have to go far up that tree, there's somebody that, is
take
a different race.
Joy Reid, right?
Who?
Joy Reid.
I heard the name,
that
but I don't know.
Female commentator. I think she's part
okay.
Nigerian, and she is Nigeria's sole slave. So they all people.
By the way, speaking of which, I saw the movie two Sundays ago, The Woman King. That was based on you know, a tribe out of what, Benin, or what we call now Benin. That was one of their primary sources of wealth, selling slaves.
That was one of the primary sources of wealth for Massa Musa. Massa Musa in Zinga of Angola. They sold slaves. Mm-hmm. They sold their own African people. Shaka Zulu was a mass murderer. They kill all babies. We going to break this stuff wide open, man. This is fun. We coming.
Well, like I say, when I saw the Woman King movie, I'm glad that was put out there. And then you can go online and read about it. Everybody that you just named, you can go and read about it. And, you know, the denial, well, I guess some people are still trying to deny it, but.
Oh, Angela Davis is trying to deny. She don't believe it. She's shocked.
She doesn't want to believe it.
Yeah, she's the little princess, Black Power, Black Panther, Marxist, Leninist. She's the little darling princess. Hair all over her head, openly gay. Mm-hmm. Somebody will be sending her some bills.
I don't see, you know what, if there ever is, and I don't think there, if there will be, I don't think there's going to, coming up with the definition that people can agree on, and then who's going to pay who, because there's a whole lot of Angela Davises walking around.
There's a whole lot of Angela Davis walking around. Whole lot of blacks that's heavily mixed.
Right.
When they talking about they deserve reparations for slavery. Not to even, and see, I'm going to tell you another place to look for them, too, is down there in New Orleans. Lower Louisiana.
Yep. You're absolutely right. I remember when I was young, I was at my grandparents' house in New Orleans. And I went into my grandfather's room for something. And my grandfather was, you can tell he was black, but he was light-skinned. Not light, damn near white, but, you know, light-skinned dude. And so I went in his bedroom looking for something, and I saw a picture of what I thought at the time was a white man. So I asked my mother, I said, who's that white man on, because we called him Papa, on Papa's bedside table. She said, that's his brother. And then I got some history behind that. But you're right, that New Orleans,
well, look at that mirror down there.
You got a lot of that down there.
Look at that mirror down there in New Orleans, Katrina.
Uh-huh.
And I showed you how we went on the website and looked up that one company, One United, and we started going back in their history. Took you back in the 1800s, white people. What's the lady's name? That own, what's the media mogul, Kathy Hughes?
Oh, yeah. Didn't she have her mother or something? What was that, the sweetheart's dad, some kind of boarding school? But that's in Mississippi, though, isn't it?
Yeah, I forget where. I forget where we traced it back.
It's somewhere in Alabama, Mississippi. I don't think it's in Louisiana, but yeah, you're right. Well, I wouldn't be surprised if somebody up that bloodline was a slave owner.
Well, down in New Orleans, 28 to 30% of all blacks. 28 to 30% of free blacks in New Orleans were slave holders, and 80% of them were women. They were mulattoes.
Right.
They were mulattoes. One pair of black, one pair of white.
Yeah. Kathy,
you know who else?
Right now.
You know who else fit that description?
Who's that?
W.E.B. Du Bois.
Oh, yeah, no
and
doubt about
I believe, it. And I believe
well,
Booker,
you know,
T.
And Booker T. Washington. Booker T. Washington
and
was,
Frederick
by
Douglass.
Definition, mulatto.
And Frederick Douglass.
Yeah, Frederick Douglass is another one.
It just goes to show you, he had a white dad. And what they do on his
so
picture,
did,
they show him a little darker than what he really is. Or really was, should I say.
Yeah, Booker T. Washington's dad was white also.
They show Frederick Douglass darker than what he really was. Now, when they did that with O.J., they all holler and call racist. You're showing him as
right.
a demon. Well, what you doing with Frederick Douglass?
Yeah. You're right.
See, it's time to expose these people. They've been getting along with these lies. Then they talk about, well, now we can add Angela Davis to the critical race theory lesson. Right?
We can.
But when she show up in the
Let's
history
bring
book.
Bring it out and bring the rest of them out of the, get them out the closet.
Yeah, when she shows up in the history book, we got to say, wait a minute. Wasn't her ancestor slaveholders? The 1619 project.
And she has personally benefited. She has personally benefited from that bloodline.
Oh, hell yeah. Yes, she has. And it's another thing, too, like these inventions. They want to say blacks invented this, invented that, invented all that. That is just not true. They may have added on and innovated something that already existed, but they did not invent it in many cases at a time.
Mm-hmm.
But when you read the heading, it said black invention, the lawnmower, which would have been the pushmower. That's a lie.
Right.
That's an innovation off something that already exists. And common sense would tell you that because Europe was way more developed than the United States, right?
Yeah.
Had to be. That's why settlers came here. So it's these lies upon lies upon lies.
That's a very important inventing versus, you know, taking something that's already there and then improving on it, which is innovation, like you just said. That's a very
Absolutely.
Important distinction.
So that's what you have to look out for. And most people are unsusceptible because what they're being told sounds so good. It sounds good. And they lie. They have a bunch of damn lies.
But is it? Yeah, well, it's true. Well, nobody's disputing it, what you're saying. Huh?
Where's the rest of your crew?
Man, it's quiet this Monday. It's real quiet.
Well, anyway,
so,
man,
I don't
I'll
know screens about to pop up here. Well, I'm going
to
wrap up.
Get back to the show.
I'm going to wrap up because it is real quiet, but thanks for calling in. And
sure.
We'll put something together tomorrow. I don't know what. All right. Okay, people, I'm going to wrap it up for today. That's it. Everyone have a good, you know, it's, I'm going to find me something to get into busy, particularly dealing with the Black Towns and Settlements Project. All right. See you guys tomorrow.